Welcome to the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com. We go live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and check in on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, interviews, recaps, previews. Hey, we cover anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres. Every week, I'm alongside my co-host Fred Alvader. This week, especially, we had another show here on eDraft.com, but we're going 1 hour later. But he's here with me. Fred Alvader, welcome. Hi, how are you today?
Carlos, we made it. A little technical difficulty tonight, but we're on just a little bit hour later, but we're good. Hey, Carlos, did you see the story about the Colorado Rockies to sell marijuana brownies at Major League Baseball games?
What?
Can you see this at golf tournaments in Colorado? What would Tim Finchem say? Hey, dude, drug test. We don't need no stinking drug test, man. I grew up in the 60s and 70s and still cannot wrap my head around this. Apple pie, baseball, and marijuana brownies. Kind of loses something in translation there. Hey, Carlos, we got a lot of golf to talk about. We're getting started later. Let's go.
Let's go. Let's start right away. And we have to start like usual with our weekend backspin, recapping the weekend's action on major stores. I am going to start right away talking about Jason Day, who held a 54-hole lead at Bay Hill, but he struggled with his swing on the final day. His lead was gone on the front nine when Kevin Chappell, Troy Merritt, and Henrik Stenson, all of them enjoyed stints at the top of the leaderboard, but Day saved his best for last. He was one behind Kevin Chappell with two holes to play, and after Chappell birdied the 16th, as Chappell stood over the 20-foot par putt on the final green, I don't know if you saw this, but a cheer went from the 17th as Day sent his birdie putt home. Chappell admitted afterwards that it rattled him a bit. And that two-shot swing meant that Day needed par at the home hole to claim an 8th PGA Tour victory. He did it the hard way, though. He fired his approach into a greenside bunker, and he was left with a very testing up and down to take the title. He played a superb bunker shot to within 4 feet of the cup and hold out for par and a win. With the victory, Jason Day has climbed back above Rory McIlroy to second place on the official World Golf Rankings. He's now less than a point behind Jordan Spieth and could overtake him this week at the WGC match, Dell Match Play. Day joins a long list of players on great form as the Masters approaches. He, Chuck Schwartzel, Adam Scott have all been winners on the Florida swing. It's the first time since 1993 that all four of the Florida events have been won by major champions. Troy Merritt, hey, he made a significant charge there on the back nine. He started the run for home with 5 straight birdies, looked good, including a hole out from the greenside bunker on the 14th, and went on to the final hole just one behind playing partner Day. But his run came to an end on that hole as his approach found the water. The resulting double bogey meant that he dropped back into the tie for third place with Henrik Stenson. Still, he can be pleased that his week it comes on the back of 5 missed cuts in the last 6 events, so that's good for him. And talking about Henrik Stenson, he just missed out again at Bay Hill. He has now finished 3rd this year, 2nd, 5th, and 8th in his last 4 starts at the Arnold Palmer Invitational. He had a chance on Sunday, though, but it went at the 16th when he found the water. He admitted afterwards that his game has been something of a knife edge through the week, and he never felt 100%, which didn't build confidence for him. And finally, after finishing in a tie for 27th, Roy McIlroy spoke of his inconsistency so far this season. He says that it's nothing technical, but rather mental, by beating himself up over mistakes and not letting go. Fred, he has just 3 weeks to sort those psychological issues out before the year's first major at Augusta.
Yeah, I'm going to save a response for that till a little bit later in the show, Carlos. We're going to talk about that a little bit. But from Arnold's tournament this week, Arnie limited his time on site and on camera. You know, he's looking pretty old. Bay Hill, to be in great shape, it was a really true challenge for the players. A lot of balls found the water. You know, that's Florida golf. Take a lot of golf balls with you. You're going to play in Florida. Hey, Carlos, let's talk a little bit about the LPGA Tour. Se-young Kim won very quietly last year 3 times. and collected the LPGA Rookie of the Year Award, really making a name for herself this season. The 23-year-old from South Korea won the JTBC Founders Cup last week on the LPGA Tour, and in five starts thus far in 2-6-10 finishes. In addition to her win last week, she finished runner-up at the Pure Silk and third at the Coates Golf Championship. She is now second on the LPGA Tour money list with $417,000 in earnings. Plus, she moves to number 5 in the world in just her second year on tour. She's only 5'3". She ranks number 4 on tour with a 279-yard driving average. The other big story out of Scottsdale last week was the fact that South Korean women have won 4 of the first 6 awards. It was great to see some of the founders and pioneers of the LPGA Tour honored at the event. This is a great tradition started by the LPGA Tour. Don't forget, Carlos, just a couple of years ago, the ladies played this event for free. There was no prize money. At the other end of the age spectrum, Hannah O'Sullivan is the 16-year-old U.S. women's amateur champ that was in the field at the JTBC Founders last week. While her friends went on trips with her parents to the beach, this high school senior used her spring break to compete in an LPGA Tour event. She finished 72, 64, 72, 67, T33. In doing so, she bested Julianne So-Young-Ru, 36 other tour pros that made the cut, as well as the other 70 that missed the cut, including Ann Jessica Korda. Before we leave the LPGA, did you notice that Brooke Henderson moved to number 8 in the Rolex rankings? She has 4 top 10s in her 5 starts this year and is number 6 on the LPGA Tour money list with $261,000. She is hot, Carlos.
And she's flying under the radar, but everybody's radar but ours, because we keep a very close, tight look at her, and good luck the rest of the way. Hopefully she can fly quick out there, but hey, the competition is stiff. Hey, SSP Chaurasia of India, he finally won his home open after 4 previous runner-up finishes. He held off defending champion Anirban Lahiri at Delhi Golf Country Club. Chaurasia led the Hero India Open to 54 holes, but Lahiri, he burst out of the blocks in the final round with 3 straight birdies from the opening hole. Last year, Lahiri, he had defeated Chaurasia in the playoff for the title, and SSP must have felt, you know, like an ominous sense of a repeat performance when he dropped a stroke at the 6th and Lahiri joined him at the top of their board. But hey, kudos to him. He struck back with a birdie at the 8th and played amazing the rest of the way. He sealed the victory with a great approach on the home hole and closed with a birdie. This was SSP Chaurasia's 3rd European Tour title and is an important one. With the victory, he has to be secured playing rights on the circuit, having lost them by finishing 113th in last year's race to Dubai. After 4 second-place finishes in the Indian Open, the 37-year-old has finally a win in his name. Chaurasia has participated in 16 professional competitions there at Delhi Golf Club, and his record is exceptional. He has 10 for top 10 finishes and 2 wins over that layout. Lahiri, yeah, he put an excellent defense on his title. The 28-year-old moves back into the top 50 of the official World Golf Rankings. He keeps climbing, following his second place here now in New Delhi. And one name we always keep telling you from the European Tour, there's one name that you have to listen and keep there, some taps on it. I'm going to mention this week South Korea's Yeo-Hoon Hee-won, who fired final round of 68 to tie Lahiri for second place. He was left to rue a disappointing second round of 74 that cost him a chance of victory. But at just 20 years of age, Won looks to be a great prospect, and this is by far and away the South Korean's best performance in an European Tour event. His best finish was a tie for 14th in the Malaysian Open last year. So, Fred, Yeo-Hoon Hee-won, that's a name to keep a tap on from South Korea.
Yeah, you know, we didn't get this in the interview, but Ron Sirak addressed the Korean dominance, women dominance on the LPGA Tour, and he said, you know, the men are at a disadvantage from Korea because just like we saw with Sang-moon Bae, they have to go and do their mandatory military service right in their prime years. So, you know, he's going to see that in another couple years. He's going to have to go off to the military. Hey, Carlos, one more thing before we leave the European Tour. I just wanted to say thank you for taking the European Tour recap so that I didn't have to worry about pronouncing those names. Good job on that. Hey, there was a tour. There was a tournament on the Champions Tour last week, the Tucson Conquistadores Classic, with probably the worst trophy in golf. After a holdout bunker shot on number 15 for Eagle to take the lead at the Conquistadores Classic in Tucson, Woody Austin drove it in the water at the 72nd hole. Bogey was good enough for the win. Bernhard Langer made one of his rare mistakes and also found the water off the tee at the last hole. Langer, after Austin, he had to be thinking, I'm faced with the possibility of being forced to pose for pictures wearing that god-awful gold-plated Conquistador hat if I win. So Langer hit it in the water, so did he lose on purpose? I'm sure that's it. That's my story. I'm sticking to it, Carlos. This was Austin's 28th start on the PGA Tour, on the Champions Tour, and his first Champions Tour victory. Aquaman had to rely on his younger son, Peyton, to tote the bag for the week, as his older son, Parker, had to call in sick. He explained the change. Parker wanted a caddy this week, and that was the prelude to the whole thing. We all went on a really nice golf vacation at the start of spring break last week. We played Pebble last Sunday, got to play Spyglass, Spanish Bay, so I finally got in some golf. Got to work on my game a little bit, but Parker came down sick and Peyton had to stump for his older brother. My dad never took me to Pebble Beach, Spyglass, or Spanish Bay to the Monterey Peninsula for spring break. I'm really pissed at him, Carlos. Another interesting story from the Champions Tour this week, Esteban Toledo. We've had him on the show. He's been a guest here. Really wonderful gentleman. Never received the handwritten invitation to the Masters as a player. Always wanted to be inside the ropes. He will be at the 2016 Masters as the caddy for Sandy Lyle. He started putting feelers out a couple years ago. He asked Ben Crenshaw first about caddying for him, but Crenshaw was hanging him up, and he really wanted Carl Jackson to be on the bag when he did that, so that didn't work out. So he happened to mention something to Sandy Lyle, and a few months later, Sandy came down. Are you serious about that? And Esteban said, dead serious, and so Sandy agreed, and they're going to hook up for this year's match. I thought that was a pretty cool story, Carlos.
It is, and we feel very happy for Esteban. He's not playing, but hey, he's going to be inside the ropes. Like he said, he wanted to see what happens there inside the ropes. He has never, ever even been to the Masters, so great for him and great for Sandy for giving him the chance. Hey, there was action also on the two minor tours, the qualifying tours for the big tours in the PGA Tour and the European Tour. The Web.com Tour, Wesley Bryan, he remained steady in breezy conditions over the weekend and won the Web.com Tour's Chitimacha Louisiana Open in Broussard, Louisiana on Sunday. The 25-year-old South Carolina native who was making his third start on the circuit closed with a 68 at the Le Triomphe Golf and Country Club and could finish 14 under, one stroke ahead of Argentina's Juliane Tulian. Bryan broke out of a five-way tie for the lead with a birdie of 17 in the final round and went to win. So congratulations to him. And on the Challenge Tour, the European Challenge Tour, Sebastian Söderberg of Sweden, he won the European Challenge Tour season opening Barclays Kenya Open in Nairobi on Sunday. The 25-year-old, also 25-year-old, just like Wesley Bryan, he closed with a 67 at Caddy Conference Club to finish at 18 under, which was three strokes better of French amateur Romain Langwenske, who won the Amateur Championship at Carnoustie last year and is expected to turn pro at the Masters. This was the Söderberg's first win on this circuit. And with that, we will wrap up our weekend backspin. We're going to take our first short break, and when we come back, we have right away the Par 5 News presented by United Golf Network. So don't go away anywhere.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for the Par 5 News presented by United Golf Network. And Fred, you're going to have a tee shot. There seems to be something going on with runaway luggage or something like that. What's going on?
Yeah, we've got just a small mini brouhaha boiling on the LPGA Tour. Nothing really getting out of hand, but Beth Ann Nichols from Golf Week reported Hana Yang, the bubbly winner of two LPGA events in 2016, returned to South Korea after her victory at the HSBC Champions in Singapore a couple weeks ago and faced a rather serious line of questions. In Ji Chun, the 2015 U.S. Women's Open champion and the leader in the Rookie of the Year race on the LPGA Tour over Megan King and Gabby Lopez, suffered an injury to the muscle surrounding her tailbone and was forced to withdraw from the HSBC Women's Champions. A suitcase being carried by Hanan Yang's father tumbled down an escalator at the Singapore airport and caused the injury to Chun. Korean media reported that Yang's father lost his grip on the bag as he was watching his daughter tie a shoelace. As these things happen, Yang went on to win the HSBC Champions, did her little happy dance, and Chun fans in Korea saw that as a severe slap in Chun's face. Yang's father reportedly apologized immediately after the incident, but Chun's father felt more needed to be done, telling Korean media, "Regardless of how the accident came about, there has been no proper apology from Yang's side, even though a player was left unable to compete." Hana had said at the airport, "I'm really sorry for what happened to Chun. I hope to see her at the next event." Chun has fallen to number 9 in the Rolex rankings, while Yang's victory has her at number 6 in the world. Chun is a trooper and is trying to take the high road. She told Korean reporters, "I'm okay. I'm already over it." We may want to watch these two down the road, though, Carlos. This has Olympic ranking implications, and as we all know, the Koreans have a very highly contested race for the 4 spots available to them for the women's Olympic team. Currently, NB Park's number 2 in the world, Se-young Kim number 5, Hanan Yang number 6, and Amy Yang number 7 would make the team. But In-ji Chung is the next highest ranked Korean at number 9, so those things are going to change. I would say Amy Yang better win and better win quick, or she's going to get pushed down and Chung's going to overtake her. An update this week shows that Chun is still not ready to return. In addition to missing the Founders Cup last week, she has withdrawn from the Kia Classic this week. The question is, will she be able to return for the Anna Inspiration, the first major on the women's tour this season next week, Carlos?
I don't know. She better check when she's going to go down the stairs next time in an airport who's behind her. If, if Hana Yang is behind her, let her go first. You know, just saying. Anyway, not to put any controversy on this.
I know. Don't turn around. Don't turn your back on her.
Don't do that. We don't do that here. There's a topic that we have been covering at capacity here in Black Knight Report. We even did a practice range segment on it, and it's about the growth or maybe decline of participation in the sport of golf. It depends, you know, how you want to see it. Let's start by stating what Brian Costa published on the Wall Street Journal on March 7th in his article titled "Americans Want to Play Golf Until They Try It." He basically states that the number of people trying golf for the first time has gone up, but overall participation continues to drop. Then asks the question, what is the sport doing wrong? He goes on to take a lot of figures and facts to support his statements. American golf should be growing rapidly. The sport is attracting more new players in the U.S. now than at any time since the early 2000s. And yet, when the National Golf Foundation released its annual participation report last Tuesday, it showed another decline in the number of people who played the game at least once in the last year. So he says that these two are contradictory trends. Maybe the most telling indication that the state of the industry of golf is stagnant. Plenty of people are taking up the game for the first time, but very few are sticking with it. And according to the National Golf Foundation, a leading research and consulting group, that is less an indictment of the game of golf itself than of the operators of the country's more than 15,000 courses. So, that stated, Pete Veracqua, who last week we mentioned got an extension as the CEO of the PGA of America, he went immediately on the defensive side, and through a piece written by him and published on Golf Digest, he went on to explain why the sport of golf isn't on the rough, like the Wall Street Journal says. He stated the piece. He started the piece by saying that he caddied from the age of 10 through the summer of his first year of law school. That's 13 summers. During that time, he came to realize that there are essentially two types of ball players: those who stand on the tee and think, "If I execute properly, I can birdie this hole," and those who are convinced they will make a bogey even before taking back the club. He says, you know, perception matters. Well, I think he's completely right. I mean, both pieces go on compelling on how to explain their take on the numbers. I mean, it's extensive, both of them. It would make sense any way you want to put it, depending on how you want to see the glass, either half full or half empty. Of course, Mr. Bevacqua sees it half full. One example I'm going to state is, you know, Bevacqua states that some headlines about the NGF study focus on a drop in golf participation from 24.7 million to 24.1 million. While that number is disappointing, it falls well within the statistical margin of error for the study, which was plus or minus 800,000 golfers. So this could be normal. Okay, if you ask me, and I work with statistical equations on a daily basis, saying that it's just being optimistic that the report estimated wrongly, fully, and that, you know, according to Bevacqua, they should be having a surplus of 100,000. Well, let me tell you something, Mr. Bevacqua, in real life that never happens. I know you and Mr. Steve Mona, a great friend of the show, are bullish about the millennials and the numbers of taking up the game, but life is a cyclical thing, and everything evolves to a different thing with the pass of time. I mean, you see now it's about the millennials. You change the game, you're going to take the olders away, but what happens with these millennials? You have to change it for the other ones, then those ones are going to go, and I can go on and keep talking about it, and I'm going to stop for now. But anyway, Tiger Woods, he went on the side of the NGF when he stated, and I quote, "How do you keep them still interested in it? How do you keep it fun?" That's one of the things we're running into right now with the game of golf. It's just stagnant. We have people coming to the game, but they exit the game. There's no sustainability, end of quote. You know, the report said that the problem doesn't lie on the core, Mr. Bevacqua. The ones that are playing it keep playing it. It's about how to keep the ones that pick up the game at whatever age they're doing it. It's not only about the teens and the millennials. It's about everyone at every age. I will now finish, or Fred will find a way to mute me. You know, this issue is a pet peeve of mine. But I just think that they're so wrong and far-fetched about the approach that they are going to miss the mark by half the diameter of the Earth. I will leave it with a quote from the NGF chief executive, Joe Bells. He said, "Golf needs to be more beginner-friendly. It's like we are running a gas station. Come or don't come, here's the price," end of quote. Fred, I couldn't have said it better myself.
We're going to have some good comments from Ron Sturek, the state of the game, and so I will defer any comments until then, Carlos. He is the expert. Really, really exciting news here this week. One of these things that everybody knew, but they finally made it official last week. PGA of America released the following statement last week concerning the Grand Slam of Golf. You remember the Grand Slam of Golf, right? Four guys, maybe one or two major players, and a couple other guys that were warm bodies would happen to have their sticks there so they could play. After carefully evaluating the PGA Grand Slam of Golf over the past few years and studying how this event fits with today's golf landscape and the PGA of America's long-term strategic plan, the PGA has decided to discontinue the event. Boy, some guy with a big, big college degree wrote that, didn't he? Didn't he do a nice job with that? When the PGA Grand Slam of Golf was launched in 1979, the golf world was much different than it is today. The PGA Tour's wraparound schedule, the European Tour's Race to Dubai, plus other important international events make the fall schedule very busy and hectic for the top players in the world. It had also become challenged to attract fans, television viewership, and media interest. They failed to mention big-name sponsors in there, Carlos. While we have enjoyed staging the PGA Grand Slam of Golf, given those many factors, the timing is right to discontinue the event. The Grand Slam of Golf is dead. The Grand Slam was made for television, featuring the winners of the four major championships. It was historically held every October. And in recent years, the big names always seem to find a reason to beg off. leaving the PGA to fill in with prior champions or just any warm body to fill the spot. It had long ago lost its luster. Just last year, it was pulled from Donald Trump's lush L.A. golf course, Trump National, due to Donald's inflammatory remarks on his proposed immigration policies. It was not rescheduled, and this announcement finally puts it to rest. Donald Trump is responsible for killing it. The truth is, it had been dead for some time. The two-day 36-hole stroke play event began, as I said, in 79, played on various venues around the world, Oak Hill, Hazeltine, the Breakers, PGA National, Kemper Lakes, Kauai, PGA West, and Poipu Bay. Since 2007, it had been held in Bermuda. What a nice place to go to Bermuda. Who wouldn't want to go to Bermuda? What, the last place guy got, what, I don't know, what, 250 grand or something, didn't he? 150 grand for showing up? One more example, though, Carlos, of what losing Trump's backing and influence in the golf business means for tournaments around the world. If you'd have played at Trump's place, you know, he might have found some people to pay, you know, because he won, you know. I'm just saying, you know. Trump and golf, Trump and golf. Think about it.
May it rest in peace. And, you know, it felt like this one, you have this dead person and you just keep getting the casket everywhere. That's how this week here, the other week there, so everybody can see it before saying goodbye. Hey, just say goodbye to it. It was dead a long time ago. Anyway, a feel-good story, or somewhat. You know, for most Chinese students, extracurricular athletics means badminton, ping pong, basketball, or volleyball. But for 400 students in Shanghai, afternoon sports mean teeing off at the green, and attendance is mandatory. The Experimental School of Foreign Languages, affiliated to East China Normal University, ESFL for short, is a government-supported primary school with ties to two Chinese colleges. Since the second semester in school last year, the school has run a compulsory golf course to be taking all of its first and second grade students twice a week on Mondays and Thursdays. ESFL principal Xi Jinping, he told Chinese media outlet The Paper that, and I quote, playing golf won't just improve students' athleticism, it will also train them in international etiquette and improve their character, end of quote. The requirement is particularly surprising given the Chinese government's avowed disapproval. I mean, Mao Zedong, he banned the sport in 1949, calling it a sport for millionaires. The ban that lasted until 1984 as part of Xi Jinping's anti-corruption campaign. Authorities are shutting down golf courses and banning Communist Party members from partaking in the game. ESFL isn't the only primary school in China to teach golf, but the paper counted 30 primary schools in China offering golf classes for students. But unlike ESFL, most of those schools were either private or foreign, and the classes were optional. Despite the government's disdain for the game, there are plenty of enthusiasts in China. Comprehensive data about China's golf industry remains scarce, but the China Golf Association says there are 644 golf courses in China, and that it has 3.5 million members. Chinese trade publication Golf Equipment World estimated that the retail sales of golf-related products hit 184 million, but that was back in 2013, and they estimate that it's growing 10% annually. Chinese golf enthusiasts have colluded with property developers and locally officials by labeling courses resorts for entertainment and leisure rather than actual golf courses. As a resort, sport remains largely underground in China from a legal and regulatory perspective. But yet, when it comes to the Olympics, now all of a sudden the Chinese government is all for golf. In anticipation of the event, China hired two-time Open champion Greg Norman to coach its national team. The China Golf Association continues to hold tournaments, and 26-year-old Chao Chong Fan is emerging as the country's best hope for winning a medal in the sport. This might not be softening from the Chinese government. It might be small. But hey, every big thing was one small.
Yeah, Carlos, we've heard from a couple different sources that the Chinese government, the crackdown they had were on courses that were really built illegally. They didn't obtain the proper paperwork, the proper permits to build the courses in the first place. there was graft involved and things like that. And those are the ones that are shut down. If everybody follows the rules and does things the way that the government thinks it should be done, they actually let golf alone. But it's where they don't do it the right way, so that it gets to be a problem. Ian Poulter isn't getting much ink from his play on the golf course lately. But he keeps making headlines with his Twitter account. Ted Bishop, Holtz is now 2-0 in winning Twitter battles. Del Milligan of The Ledger reported last week that J.J. Downham, an assistant athletic director at Florida Southern, 2014, made the tweets Saturday while still employed at Florida Southern. Downham tweeted to Barstool Trent at Barstool Sports that he yelled at Poulter, "You will not make the Ryder Cup team, and you will hit it in the water." Poulter fired back on Twitter. They can't just look at each other and talk. You know, they got to do this on Twitter, okay? Much more gentlemanly. Poulter responded on Twitter, tournament officials, to remove Downham, and then got him in hot water with the university by tweeting, "I'm sure, at @FSC_athletics and at @FSC Sports, proud of your professionalism. Wish you the very best." The tweets indeed had the desired consequences for Downham. In a statement, "He's no longer employed at Tushin," said Pete Meyer, Florida Southern's director of athletics and dean of wellness, on Wednesday. Dean of wellness. I don't think Mr. Downham is very well. The flare-up made national news in several publications. Downham's post and his entire Twitter page was deleted late Monday afternoon. Before it was taken down, Downham didn't back down or make apologies. He tweeted, "Thanks, Ian. Want to watch the Ryder Cup together?" And the guy's got a sense of humor, you got to admit. Carlos, this is exactly what we talked about a couple of weeks ago. Why can't people understand the consequences of their actions on social media? You know, here's a guy that's an assistant athletic director at a university acting like an 8-year-old. What? I don't get it. It's just this lack of respect for others, not only on Facebook and Twitter, but also in real life. It's a little bit depressing for me personally. Doesn't anyone remember manners? Where's Ann Landers or Abigail Van Buren when you really need them, Carlos?
Oh, man, I cannot add any more to it. We'll be here. Oh, my God. Hey, let me tell you, perhaps sensing the schedule hasn't been kind to Arnold Palmer Invitational, or that criticism will continue of players for passing up the chance to pay tribute to the king, Ron Green in Global Golf Post filed this on Monday. The tour has announced even more enhanced status for the API. The most noticeable changes won't be on the course. It won't be on the check. Palmer's tournament at Bay Hill already elevated because the winner gets a 3-year exemption since 2014, received an even larger boost with an $8.7 million purse starting in 2017. That's an increase of $2.4 million from this year and makes it the richest PGA Tour event this side of the majors, the Players' Championships, and the WGCs. The memorial, hosted by Jack Nicklaus and also awarding a 3-year exemption, announced a purse increase to $8.5 million this year. Here's one way to put it, the Bay Hill boost into context. Arnold Palmer, the king, he earned $1,861,857 in his PGA Tour career. Based on the typical formula of 18% going to the winner, the API champion next year will get roughly $1.5.56 million. As part of the changes, the new established Arnie's Army Charitable Foundation will manage the tournament as the host organization. Palmer's charitable focus has been on the well-being and development of children and youth. The Arnold Palmer Medical Center includes the Arnold Palmer Hospital for Children and the Winnie Palmer Hospital for Women and Babies. Now the foundation wants to partner with another charitable works by PGA Tour players who share the same interests. Alistair Johnson, head of Arnold Palmer Enterprises, said two or three players whose foundations are aligned with Palmer's mission will be selected for support. Johnson said Palmer had committed at least $10 million to Arnie's Army to make sure the charitable work is sustained. This is great news. I mean, I'm all for it. This is part of Arnie's legacy. Arnie and Jack, two of the greatest of all time. And it's great that you know, there's golf's greatest goal, and pay tribute to them every year. So, hey, whatever attracts more players to them, I'm all for it. I mean, great for it. So, Fred, with that, I think we end up our weekend par five news, and I think you have some words from our sponsor.
Yeah, before I do that, though, Carlos, you know, can you imagine maybe, I'm not going to live this long, but 20 or 30 years, you won't have the Arnold Palmer Invitation, you won't have the maybe the Jack Nicklaus Memorial. You know, people will, you know, go on the way of the Sammy Davis Jr. or the Bing Crosby Clam Bake or the Bob Hope Invitational, whatever. You know, those names, as we younger people grow up and us older people die off, with those names don't mean anything. So they just get dropped from the tournaments. You know, corporations come in and take over the names. So the API will just be the MasterCard probably. Hey, Carlos, United Golf Network wants everyone to enjoy golf and make some money while doing it. Their Golf Directors Program helps you set up your very own pro shop without the overhead of an expensive inventory. You should see the weekly special from United Golf Network. I saw this today, and I just had to talk about it. You can get a Powerbuilt TPS wheeled travel cover, travel bag, a really nice one, for just $46.99. That is a heck of a deal. You go to a Golf Galaxy, a Dick's, or you know, any of the other, the Golf Smith, any of the other golf shops, you're not going to find anything for less than around $100, maybe $90 at the least. This is a really nice cover for $46.99. If you're considering a golf trip and need a new golf bag, a new travel bag, how can you not check this out? Clubs, it's on wheels. It's for easy transport through the airport or into your hotel. Plus, United Golf Directors get an additional 10% off that price. So you can take an extra $470 off that, get it down to $42. What a deal. United Golf Network has everything a golfer needs. Clubs, bags, balls, shoes, apparel, and accessories, as well as the best name brands. Check out UnitedGolfNetwork.com today and set up your own golf pro shop and get one of those great $46 travel bags, Carlos.
And with that, we'll wrap up our Par 5 News presented by United Golf Network. Take a short break. When we come back, it's time for our VIG, very important guest of the week, Ron Cerak. So don't go away.
Thank you for listening to the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. We'll be right back. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for our VIG, very important guest of the week. His name is Ron Cerak, who is a Golf Digest senior writer. In 2015, he was awarded the PGA of America's Lifetime Achievement Award in journalism, and he's the author of Play Your Best Golf Now, Every Shot Must Have a Purpose, and The Game Before the Game. Now, Fred, how about this interview with Ron Cerak?
Yeah, he was in Ohio, over by Akron, actually, to address the PGA Northern Ohio Section Spring Meeting at Firestone Country Club yesterday, and got a chance to talk with him for a few minutes, ask a few questions. In the interview, he addresses the state of the game, the Olympics, Tiger Woods, the upcoming majors on both the LPGA and PGA Tours, and the new strategic alliance, as well as upcoming negotiations for television contracts. So, Carlos, I found a really interesting, great guy to talk to, and we're going to have him on the show for down the road some more. Really become a real good friend of the show.
Here it is, interview.
We are here at the North Ohio PGA Section Spring Meeting at Firestone Country Club. We're happy to be talking to Golf Digest senior writer Ron Cerak. Ron, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me on. My pleasure.
You have been getting a lot of awards lately, so that means a couple of two things. Either one, you're really, really good, or number two, you're just getting old.
Yeah, I think it means I'm old and they're telling me to get out of the way, but it's been it was a fun year last year. I got the PGA of America Lifetime Achievement Award, the LPGA Media Excellence Award, the Met Golf Writers in New York City gave me their Link Word and Journalism Award, and I have to say that the one from the PGA of America, their Lifetime Achievement Award, I think it's such an amazing thing that that they recognize the role that media plays in helping to grow the game of golf. And it's a really wonderful thing they do.
You addressed the membership here at the section this morning, and one of your topics you talked about just a minute was growth of the game. You're not buying into the gloom and doom scenario.
No, I think there's a lot of encouraging numbers out there. More people played golf for the first time in 2015 than they have since 2000. And I think that that's an exciting thing. I think there's a lot of reasons to be bullish about the future of the recreational game. I think that my marketing message when it comes to golf would be family, fitness, fun, and fast. You know, it's a family. What other sport can you play and talk to your kids while you're playing? You know, have quality time with them. Every medical study shows if you walk 30 minutes a day, you're going to live longer. You know, golf. And if you look at some of the physical problems that are popping up in other sports and concussions in football and knee injuries in basketball and things, golf's the kind of game that you can not only play for life, but you can play for life and not do damage here.
We just saw Arnold at his tournament, a little bit of failing health, getting a little bit older. He made a comment about, you know, you can have a discussion about maybe who was the greatest golfer of all time. Was it Jack? Was it Tiger? Was it Hogan? Was it somebody else? But you said maybe the most important golfer of all time was Arnold Palmer.
I grew up just 18 miles across the border into Pennsylvania, in Newcastle, Pennsylvania. And, in fact, the first professional golf tournament I ever saw was here at Firestone, 1967 American Golf Classic. My dad worked in the steel mills, and he was a fast pitch softball player. And when he got to be about 35 years old, some more injuries with his legs made it harder for him to run. So he was looking for another sport to play. Well, because the local guy, the son of a greenskeeper, was winning golf tournaments, he took up golf. And because of Arnold Palmer, and you know, he was about 60, 70 miles away from the town that I lived in, because of Arnold, by 1960, every steel mill in western Pennsylvania had a nine-hole golf week. I look at Arnold as being the guy who took the game out of the country clubs, and he brought it to the munis, he brought it to the daily fee courses, and he brought it to middle-class, working-class people. And really, I've always felt he's the single greatest grow-the-game program golf's ever had.
You ask about the Olympics, and you had some interesting comments about that. Tell us a little bit your take on the Olympics and what you expect and what you're hearing.
The course, first off, ran behind schedule all the way, but I think they've come up with a decent product, a very serviceable product. I've talked to players who went down and played it in the test event, and they say it's just fine. There's going to be some controversy around the fact that because of the format and because of the IOC, the International Olympic Committee's need to include as many countries as possible, half of the top 25 on both the men's and the women's world rankings aren't going to qualify for the Olympics, but players from outside the top 200 are going to qualify. So you're going to have two 60-person fields, 60 for the men, 60 for the women, but they're not going to be the 60 best golfers in the world, you know, and I think you'll see some criticism about that. I frankly, on a personal level, feel that 72 holes of stroke play, that they needed to be more imaginative about that. I'd have liked to see better ball match play, you know, have brackets. Would be pretty cool if we had Jordan Spieth and Ricky Fowler playing Adam Scott and Jason Day in a match. You know, that would have more of an Olympic feel to it in my mind.
We're just a couple of weeks away now from the first couple of majors of the year. The LPGA is going to have the A&E Inspiration. And then the Masters, of course. We have a lot of great players on both tours playing very well leading into this. Do you remember a year when you've seen so many really top players, really at the top of their game, heading into the major season?
Well, you know what this reminds me of right now is it reminds me of that time between Jack Nicklaus and Tiger Woods, when we had a period in there where it was Greg Norman and Nick Faldo and Ian Woosnam and Bernard Langer and Curtis Strange and just all these people in the mix in there without the one dominant golfer. It feels like that. That said, I will say this. I remember in 1986 when Jack won that Masters at the age of 46, people saying there's never going to be another golfer as dominant as Jack Nicklaus again. There's too much parity, too much depth out here. There'll never be anybody dominate the game like Jack. And 10 years later, we had Tiger Woods. So somebody always comes along. I'm not entirely sure that person's on our radar screen right now. I think more what we're going to see is an era for a while here where 6, 8, 10 guys are all scrambling to be number one in the world.
There was an announcement a couple of weeks ago of the LPGA and PGA Tour Alliance. That may be already seeing some benefits. Marathon has stepped up with some money to get CBS to broadcast the final round on Sunday afternoon on network television. you're saying, you know, in 2021, all the network TV contracts are up for the PGA Tour. PGA Tour feels that one of the good things they can help with the LPGA is their negotiation for TV contracts. This is a big deal right now. Where do you think, maybe this is a test case for the LPGA of doing a Sunday afternoon? And where does Fox, where does CBS, where do they come in to play against NBC Golf Channel?
LPGA's TV contract with Golf Channel expires in 2019. I expect to see the PGA Tour use their considerable muscle to get them better TV exposure. And the commissioner will tell you, when I asked the LPGA commissioner, Mike Wann, do you need more tournaments? He'd say, you know, I'd like to have a couple of more domestic tournaments, but what I really need is higher purses and better TV exposure for the tournaments that I have. And he'll say, Golf Channel does a great job, but when you're on Golf Channel, you're preaching to the choir. These people are already golf fans. When you're on network TV, if you're on a CBS or an NBC, you have a chance of reaching that casual sports fan and bringing in the person who's just going around the dial and saying, oh, and then they watch the product for a little bit and say, wow, this is pretty interesting. You build your fan base more when you get out to that general casual sports fan. I talked to a PGA Tour executive about what impact we're going to see from this relationship, and the first word he used is marketing. And pivotal in marketing is going to be better TV exposure.
We've been talking to Ron Cerak, senior writer for Golf Digest, a longtime writer, very knowledgeable, always a great read. Thank you so much, Ron.
Thank you for having me on. My pleasure.
There you have it. That was Ron Cerak, the senior golf writer for Golf Digest. And Fred, I think you talk about every single subject that is important and relevant right now in golf, but I'm going to go right back to the one that you were saying that you were going to defer any comments until it happened, and that's about the participation of people in golf.
Yeah, I don't. I agree with him. I don't see the doom and gloom. I'm sorry. I talk to a lot of golf course owners. I talk to a lot of golf course people. I talk to a lot of professionals. Numbers are down a little bit, Carlos, down here at the local level. PGA Tour is doing phenomenal. USGA doing phenomenal, okay? They got the $9.3 billion contract with Fox. They're doing great. The problems come down here at the local level, but I'm going to put a caveat on that, okay? The owners just have to do a better job running their places, watching their costs. I know that's easy for me to say because I'm not doing it, but it's a day-to-day thing. They really have to watch their pennies. There is profit. Golf courses are profitable. They just have to watch what they're doing. They can't waste money. The other side of that is that country clubs that have the staid old attitude of, well, we're the fluffy, muffy country club. We don't have to go out and get new members. They'll come to us because we have. No, that's not going to work. Those people are going to go by the wayside because the young people are not going to join a stuffy country club. Ain't going to happen. But there are enough golfers. There's over 25 million. No, there's not over 30 like there used to be. But there's over 25, and it's growing. And, Carlos, the other part of this is that I feel really strongly about is that the first tee, PGA Junior Golf League, all the junior programs, there's a bunch of pros around the country that go to the schools and put on their own programs. They don't even do first tee. They're doing their own programs in the schools, making golf a phys ed program. These kids are playing league golf, team golf. They're going to get this experience, and they're going to want to play as they get older. And so we're developing a whole new group of golfers right now in the schools that's never been done before, Carlos, with the first tee, with junior golf, with all the great programs that are out there.
Okay, I'm just going to leave it there because you know my position. I still think, you know, there's a lot more that has to be done in order for the game of golf to grow, and it's not just including the youngsters. I think that's my problem is that everybody keeps focusing on the youngsters. Why not look for everybody? I mean, it's hard to get
older people to come out and do it. You know,
it's not hard.
It's hard to get them to do it, Carlos.
No, it's not hard.
How many times did you play golf last year?
Three times.
And you're kind of in the business, kind of. Okay. and you only played three times. Why didn't you play 20? Why didn't you play 30?
Well, a lot of people don't play 20, but there's the stat is saying they're referring to people that are playing 1 to 5 rounds a year. That's the ones that they're looking for because the core people are still there. They're not leaving the game. They're not leaving. It's the people that are picking up the game that are not staying in the game. That's the problem. But you have to make it beginner friendly, which is not happening right now for anybody.
Yeah. And I don't know what you can look around. You can look around the Dallas area right now, and I don't know if these. I do know at Houston, Tiger put in the little short course there, and you're seeing that at a lot of places, and a lot of upscale public golf courses are, if they don't have one, are looking at putting in maybe even a 6-hole or a 3-hole or a short course for juniors, for women, for beginners, or guys who just want to go out and play a few quick holes and only spend 45 minutes doing it or something. There's a lot of that going on. There's a lot more than maybe what you realize. That's going on all over the nation. Pretty much every golf facility that's being built, if it's not being done in the first phase, it's in the planning to be done in the next phase to put a little short course in to help those. The first tees are putting in little practice facilities around at a lot of locations where they can raise the money to do it. They're trying to get one done here in Toledo, a whole facility with a short course. And there's 3 or 4 short courses around town that are doing okay. It's always a tough discussion, Carlos. And everybody's different. When you're younger and you've got kids, there's no way you can play. When I was younger, I was lucky if I played 4 or 5 times a year because I was chasing after kids when I wasn't working. As I got a little bit older again now, I can get out and play some more. I can do some different stuff. I can travel a little bit and get to do some different things. But in your situation, I know you have children that you're still taking care of and working with, and you just don't have the time to get it done. So time and money are probably the two biggest issues with adult people right now, Carlos.
We could talk a lot about this. We have a lot of things to go for. So, that's like you said, that's a subject that can be discussed many, many ways. A lot of people have different opinions on it, and that's the good thing. But hopefully, I just hope a lot of these people that have all these different ideas would get together, and the ones that have the influence on it just could come to an understanding on it and try to look forward to keep growing the game and not just focusing and saying that golf is growing when the numbers are not showing that. That's just my point. But anyway, we'll take our last
question. Carlos, I want to mention two quick things here before we get away from CIRAC. I didn't get it on tape, but in his talk, he mentioned that the International Olympic Committee will be meeting next year after this year's Olympics to decide whether or not to keep golf as an Olympic sport after 2021. They're having it this time. They're going to have it again in 4 years, in 2020. But if they decide, then it will be in forever. So CIRAC made the point that the IOC is very much enjoying the additional media exposure to the upscale golf market they have been receiving. So, I don't know about the golf itself, but they like the market that they're into. It's always all about the money, Carlos. And then, the second thing is that, CIRAC mentioned about the TV contracts and the LPGA getting on network television. So it's kind of like the old chicken and the egg, which comes first. If you want bigger purses, you've got to get more exposure. To get more exposure, you got to be on network television. To be on network television, you got to get bigger sponsors and you got to have more eyes. So getting this little – I don't think people realize what a big deal this – like just an average tournament here, the Maryland Classic here in Toledo, what a big deal that is for CBS to pick that up for Sunday afternoon. And that's exactly the kind of thing that they're negotiating right now. The PGA Tour and the LPGA Tour are working – to get the LPGA Tour more exposure so that they can get bigger sponsors, purses, all that stuff. That's really exciting stuff that's happening right now for the LPGA, Carlos.
Yeah, and he mentioned about the format of the Olympics. I think that he touched a very important case there. If you want at least the Olympic feeling of it, we're not getting it here because they're having a 72-hole play. And, of course, the top players are going to have the biggest chance to win. And you don't have the attraction of having actually the top 60 players. Just a lot of bunch of players that are spaced out. But to get better feel of the Olympic feeling of it, it would have been better, like he's mentioned, to have that match play format and teams against teams. That would have been better, at least I would say it that way, hopefully. And they have been discussing about that, so I think that should be something that is going to be discussed there as well. And like you mentioned also, the marketing and now this joint alliance that they have, definitely, with the, like he mentioned, the muscle that the PGA Tour has, I'm sure that there are going to be a lot more opportunities. And he mentioned one key point is the way that we have to see it. Golf Channel, the fans already, the viewers there are already in the golf game. But when you go to the networks, the mainstream, those are not necessarily golf players or golf fans. You know, they're attracting a lot more wider audience. And that's not what they're looking at, definitely, with those new marketing schemes that they're going to be having. So definitely great to see that the golf is trying to be spread, and the LPGA is going to benefit for that. Hey, let's take the final break. And when we come back, we're going to have our practice range and our final pot. So don't go away.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at @edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for the practice range. Every week, Fred and I pick a topic and each take our own spin at it. And this week, last week we talked about Jordan Spieth and what's wrong with him, what's going on with his game. And this week we're going to talk about who is not hot going into the Masters. And, of course, we talked about Jordan Spieth last week. But there's a player that a lot of people are talking and wondering about, and that's Rory McIlroy. I mean, for his standards, he already dropped to number 3 again. He had been up to number 2. But for his standards, what he's been doing, at least in his last four tournaments, the Northern Trust, the Honda Classic, and the Arnold Palmer, the WGC, he finished 3rd, but he was up on top, and then he let it go. Also, he was on top there at the Northern Trust, but he let it go. He finished T20. He missed the cut in the Honda Classic, and now he finished T27 after being contending. So he's not trending. He said, like I mentioned in my recap on the weekend back on the weekend backswing, he said that it's not technical. His problem is apparently mental. So hey, he has 3 weeks to sort this out. But this is definitely one player that is not hot going into the Masters. Brooks Koepka is another one that he ended up the year with a bang. He was there playing great. He almost made a President's Cup. But this, especially his past 4, T23, T27, T26, and T41, and split in there was the T8 at the AT&T Pro-Am. And this is another player that was trending up, but he's been losing from 15th that he was in the world. Now he's back down to 19th. His play is definitely not trending towards the Masters. One player that's used to having a great success, at least at the beginning of the year, but it's been like in a year slump, is Jimmy Walker. And even though he finished 6th in the WGC Cadillac Championship, he had a T43, a missed cut, a T13. He didn't even have a win. This past 3 years, he's had at least one or two wins at the beginning of the year. When you come to see about it, he has 4 missed cuts since the start of the season right now, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, I'm sorry. So this is not Jimmy Walker's best start of the year. He's definitely not trending. Another one that I would mention is Zach Johnson. Since he won the Open, he really has only 2 top 10s, including the API 5th, solo 5th that he did last week. But before that, he had a missed cut T47 and a T35. He even had four missed cuts there. So Zach Johnson, maybe that fifth solo play style at the API this past weekend will bump him up, but he was definitely not having a good season, or at least since the Open. Some other players that formerly were playing great, let's talk about Lee Westwood, former number one, is definitely not trending, even though he's got two wins in the past 2 years, one each, but he's now not part of the PGA Tour. He's focusing on the European Tour. You know, he's had very various personal problems. So he has two missed cuts right now, and he had a 28th, a T42, and still in there was his two at the Thailand Golf Championship. So Lee Westwood has definitely not trending, especially with those two missed cuts. He has been losing 26 spots right now in the past year. In the world rankings, he's down to number 52 right now in the world. Luke Donald, another former number one, he's definitely been in a very long slump. He's last since he finished T7 at the Aberdeen Asset Management Scottish Open, he has recorded only one top 10, and that was the British Masters when he finished T5. But he has a miscut, T22, T61, T45, T26, and a miscut in his last six tournaments. So very sad to see Luke going south right now. And it's been a long while since we've seen him play well. And, oh, and hey, Ernie Els, he has not recorded a top 10 since the Hong Kong Open in 2014. That was a full year and a half away, and has had 12 miscuts in his last four, T74, miscut, T70, T26, T18, T29, miscut. So Ernie, definitely another one that's not trending, and that he hasn't had a top 10 in a year and a half. That's worrisome. Ian Poulter, who you talked about not long ago in the Par 5 News, is another player that's not trending. Maybe the fan was, you know, he overstepped his barriers and his limits, but he was saying the right thing. I mean, Ian Poulter is going south right now. He has a T46, T67, T43, and two missed cuts in his last five tournaments. So definitely, it's been a long time since he recorded the top five, and that was on the ISPS Handa Global Cup at the mid last year. So wow, that's June of last year. A long time since Ian Poulter has won. Another player, former great player, who has two wins in the last 2 years, one in each, but those have been his only top tens, and has missed the cut in 28 of 57 events played. That's Paddy Harrington. Wow, a lot of time for him that he hasn't played well, and he's definitely not trending. He has a couple of missed cuts along with top 30, top 40s, and top 50s in his last six tournaments. Webb Simpson, you might remember him. He won the U.S. Open since the T7 at WGC Cadillac Championship. He hasn't had a top 10. He hasn't done it. And his last has been a T68, a missed cut, and top 30 finishes. So maybe Webb Simpson, another player not trending. Keegan Bradley, since the T5 at the Chell Houston Open last year, which was before the Masters, he hasn't made only just one top 10. And he has three straight missed cuts and five in the last six. Keegan is definitely not trending. And, hey, how about Jason Duffner, who beat him up at the PGA Championship? He played well. He won the Career Builder. But since then, missed cut, T51, T68, T61, T22. So he has fell a little bit off the radar. And one more that I'm going to mention, Fred, before going up to you, is Hunter Mahan. You know, he's a streaky player, but his best finish, he's finishing T9 at the WGC Match Play last year, was after the Masters when he finished T9. And that was a T4 at the Deutsche Bank. His only top 30 finish seems to go along with eight missed cuts.
Yeah, that's a really extensive list, Carlos. You know, I'm going to just breeze through these real quickly here. You know, you mentioned Rory McIlroy. He has been erratic, to say the least. His best finish in 2016 was a T3 at the WGC Cadillac, but that's because he was in the lead and shot two over par 74, and suddenly he dropped a third when he was in the lead. Here's some numbers for you for Rory. 26, 11, 20, cut, 3, and 27. That's Rory's finishes this season since October. Only one top 10 in there in six starts. Every week he is posting at least one poor round of 74 or 75. And you mentioned that it's kind of a mental lapse, and it has to be because he's got the game. You can see it when he can play three good rounds out of four, and he's just – And you can see he's making a double, a triple or something that's just blowing him up, and then it's just, you know, like, okay, fine, this round's over. You know, that all being said, this shows just how close he really is to winning. Rory has the length to get to Augusta National. The question is his putting on those slicks, humps, and bumps. If it's all about ready for the majors, Rory might be just in the right spot, though, to add a green jacket to his closet and complete his career Grand Slam. And, Carlos, I'd almost make a prediction that Rory is the guy. Is the guy for the Masters. We'll see.
Let me say something.
I'll wait to call that, but you know, go ahead.
Remember at the end of the season of our show, I predicted Rory McIlroy is going to win. This is his year, and he's going to win the Masters. So I already have it pinned down.
You're already ahead of me.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Just wanted to make sure.
Well, like usual, we agree. Hey, Jordan Spieth started the year right where he left off 2015. With that big win at the Hyundai Tournament of Champions in Hawaii. But since the stress of too much travel and too many events, plus wearing the big number one on his back has seemed to affect his concentration on the course, and his normal grinding and brilliant short game has kind of gone awry. Last four starts, 21st cut, 17th, and 18th. For the average run-of-the-mill professional, those are really acceptable numbers, but for the number one in the world, not so much. The good news here is that he's young and doesn't know that he can't play every week and win, so his mind and good vibes will help him get it around at Augusta. Brant Snedeker, we all know how much the Masters means to Sneds. He began the year extremely hot, third in at the Tournament of Champions, runner-up at the Sony, then a win at Torrey Pines, closed out a nice January winning a cool 1.5 mil. But since then, it's been a completely different story. 33rd, 35th, withdrawal, 36th in his last four events. Where have you gone, Jimmy Walker? You talked about this. He seemingly was in contention in nearly every event he entered. Two wins in 2014, two wins again in 2015, but none since May last year at the Valero Texas Open. He's fallen to number 24 in the world in his only number 36 in the FedEx Cup. He's only had two top tens in his last eight starts. But never fear, there's a bunch of events coming up in Texas over the next few weeks, so maybe he can get well down there. Justin Rose, not really cold, but he is lukewarm. He does have three top tens in six starts, but when he has been in contention, he can't seem to finish strong on the weekend. Not sure if he's long enough for Augusta, especially if it rains and the course gets soft. Here's your guy, Sergio. He's not won on the PGA Tour since 2012. Has had a few close calls, but always seems to find a way to turn victory into yet another loss. Has played in five events on the PGA Tour this season, a 24th, two 11th place finishes, and a missed cut, plus the runner-up at the Honda. Tremendous talent, but a mental case. Scars in the attic. His new putting technique seems to be working fairly well, and he makes a lot of money, and if that makes you happy, he should be ecstatic. Matt Kuchar, you didn't mention Matt. He's one of my favorite guys, always really consistent. He's fallen to number 30 in the world ranking. His last win came last year at the 2 years ago at the 2014 RBC Heritage on Hilton Head. Kuchar is normally like an ATM, a top 10 machine. In seven starts this season, he only has one top 10 finish, and he just missed the cut at the Arnold Palmer Invitational. He needs to get back to the range or something. I don't know what's going on there. He's much better than that. Patrick Reed, bringing new meaning to the word erratic. His last six finishes, listen to this, Carlos, 56th withdrawal, 6th, 52nd, 7th. I mean, just like a yo-yo, man. He had a good fall with two top tens and added a runner-up to Spieth at the Tournament of Champions, but up and down since. He has the grit and determination, is always grinding, and can get hot at any time. I would not want to face him in a war of wills. He appears to be someone who likes the spotlight and to compete in big tournaments. This could be a really big week for him at the we haven't talked about it, but the Dell Match Play is this week in Austin, and this could be a good tournament for you. You know, he likes match play. He's good at match play. He could just scare the other player to death, maybe, or take him down and wrestle him or something. I'm not sure what. But, and then you mentioned some names, and I put them in my category, freezing and completely falling off the radar. Lee Westwood, Ian Poulter, Graham McDowell, Martin Kaymer. And then you mentioned three guys. Well, I'm going to address Ernie Els. He's 46, man. He's got a lot of other stuff going on in his life. He's been around the world. He's been there, done that. You know, it's understandable. But the other guys, Webb Simpson, Keegan Bradley, and Duffner, and even Hunter Mahan, those guys should be playing a little bit better than what they're playing. I'm not sure what the deal is with them. They're not that old yet. They're still they still should be in contention. So that's all I have on that, Carlos.
Oh, I have to agree. I mean, there's so many good players that we have gotten used to, but that goes to tell you how good Jordan, Rory, Ricky, Adam Scott coming back, and, you know, they are doing so great that these players, I mean, who used to be at top of their game, right now they're not even being missed. And like you mentioned, they have fallen off the radar, and nobody's even talking about them. Keegan Bradley, like you said, Webb Simpson, Hunter Mahan, oh, what happened to them? They should be, and I really don't know. And it's also sad to see, you know, there's some problems with Lee Westwood, personal problems. Luke Dunno hasn't found his game again. And just to go to the defense of Brent Snedeker, you know, he had withdrawn from the WGC Cadillac because he has this condition that is known as a long bone turnover, which makes his ribs and his bones brittle. And he had, in 2013, he was diagnosed with that. He had endured recurring rib fractures before he was diagnosed with that. He had that condition flare up. Again, he's using a medication called Forteo, but it helps increase his bone density. But, you know, and even though he's been relatively injury-free, he has been trying to get that under control again. He was going to play at the API. He didn't. But one thing that is good is that he had, before he started the year, he had picked up a new driver, a new ball, and he got 8 to 10 yards off the tee thanks to that new driver and that ball. So, hey, look out for him if he gets healthy again for the Masters. So that's what's going on with Brent Snedeker. Hey, let's go now for the final putts before we end the show, and I'm going to start talking about Youth on Course, which is a nonprofit organization providing youth with subsidized rounds, college scholarships, paid internships, and other golf access benefits. It extended to a pair of major markets by partnering with the Chicago District Golf Association Foundation and the Southern Nevada Golf Association, so they'll be in Chicago, Las Vegas. As a part of the agreement, junior golfers in these territories will be able to join the Youth on Course Network and access unlimited golf for $5 or less per round. Courses offering the program this season will be announced soon. It was born out of the Northern California Golf Association. The Youth on Course has grown now to include nearly 15,000 members across the 9 states that it is right now. And through the subsidizing of green fees, 380,000 rounds to date since 2006 when they opened, the course don't lose any revenue, and there is a major financial barrier that is removed from the young players. Hey, sad news. Sari Pak, the Tiger Woods of women's golf in South Korea, announced on Thursday that she will retire from competition at the end of this season. The 5-time major champion will not, however, be stepping away from the game as she plans to continue mentoring young golfers in her homeland. Pak was as much an inspiration to Inbae Park and even younger generation of Korean golfers who crowd the top of most LPGA boards every week, as Woods was to Rory McIlroy, Jordan Spieth, and today's PGA Tour stars. The 38-year-old, who has struggled with shoulder injuries that limited her to 8 starts last year and her last of 25 tour wins in 2010, and will play several events in this final campaign. As to what her legacy will be, she who became the youngest golfer at age 30 in 2007 to enter the World Golf Hall of Fame, she seemed to be remembered for more than her skills on the course. And she definitely will. I mean, now, thanks largely to the iconic status in which she's held in her country, 33 of her country women play what is truly a global LPGA Tour. 6 of the top 10 and 10 of the top 20 in the world are of Korean descent. And finally, Fred, 2-time Masters champion and member of the World Golf Hall of Fame, Jose Maria Olazabal, he will not play in the Masters for health reasons that have kept him from competing in a tournament since he shot 71 at the second round of the Masters a year ago when he missed a cut. He did not specify his health problems on Friday, only that tests show some improvement. The 50-year-old Spaniard won the Masters in 1994 and 1999, his second green jacket, which you all might remember. He won over Greg Norman following a debilitating ailment in his foot that he feared would end his career. So he was a winning Ryder Cup captain for Europe 4 years ago. So prompt recovery for you, Jose Maria. Hopefully you're back in playing golf soon.
You know, you mentioned Sayre Pack there, and you probably don't know this, Carlos, but Sayre Pack won the Jamie Farr Classic, which is now
where is
the Marathon Classic.
Where
it's
is
right here in Toledo, Ohio. Toledo.
Ah, yeah.
She won that 5 times, Carlos. 5 times. Just so you know.
Okay.
No problem. It's just my job to keep you informed. There was a great article by LaWine Mayer in the yesterday's issue of Global Golf Post talking about how much more is demanded of caddies by today's professional golfers. Can't you show up, shut up, and keep up as in the olden days? Yardage books have become a work of art, detailing yardage from every rock, tree, and depression on the course. Fall of the land and possible putt lines are strategically outlined in depth. Also has to be a coach, mental guru, priest, therapist, and meteorologist. How would you like to be Ted Scott, Bubba Watson's caddy, and deal with his idiosyncrasies on the golf course in front of millions of people? You never know when Bubba's going to blow. Caddies, top guys, earn a lot of money. Several earn over $1 million each year, and many earn over $500,000. But it's still up to the guy swinging the club to get it done. All the caddies do is advise, listen, and motivate when necessary. But great article there in Global Golf Post. News out of the Sumatra Tour announced last week that the top two finishers at the Firekeepers Casino Hotel Championship were earned spots into the Evian Championship, the fifth and final major on the LPGA Tour schedule. This is the first time in history that players will earn spots in an LPGA major off the finish at a Sumatra Tour event. That's big news, Carlos. The Firekeepers will be held in Battle Creek, Michigan, July 18th through the 24th. The Hall of Fame, World Golf Hall of Fame, announced a new exhibit titled Major Moments, Celebrating Golf's Greatest Championships. It's officially opened at the World Golf Hall of Fame. It recants the stories of the four men's major championships through colorful counts and Hall of Fame member artifacts. You got one reason to go to the World Golf Hall of Fame in St. Augustine, besides the fact of all the other great golf memorabilia that's there, and I think there's 54 holes of golf course there. Great place to go, and you can visit the Major Moments exhibition. Carlos?
Well, there you have it. That wraps up another week of the Recommend Report presented by eDraft.com. Thank you for listening. It's always our pleasure to bring you the latest on the world of golf. Special thanks to our VAG, very important guest of the week, author and Golf Digest senior writer Ron Sirek. Don't forget to join us again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. Yes, we hope we are going to be at 8 p.m. Eastern Time here on Block Talk Radio. Or if you missed it, check it out on iTunes or TuneIn. And if you haven't done so, hey, follow the show. Do it right now. Our Twitter ID is at Back9Report with the number 9 in the middle. My name is Carlos Torres. Along with Fred Alvader, we wish you to be happy, be blessed, and enjoy the great game of golf. Happy golfing, everybody.